I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Gits on Herbs is teaming up with Positive Grid to give one lucky listener their very own Spark Smart Amplifier. Visit positivegrid.com/guitar nerds. It's super simple, and you could be the owner of one of the most fun and feature-packed amps I've ever played. Spark is a comprehensive solution for home jamming, learning, and recording through electric, acoustic, or bass. You can play and practice with millions of songs and access to over 10,000 tones, powered by Positive Grid's Bias Tone Engine. Spark features a smart and intuitive range of rotary controls on the amp itself, but really comes to life when used alongside its companion app for iOS or Android. It's so well laid out. Straight out of the box, I was able to tailor my tone with a bunch of amp models and a comprehensive range of effects. There's no learning curve here or complex interface, just tons of tones straight off the bat. I love the Smart Jam feature. Play a looping riff on Spark and the amp and accompanying app work together to learn your riffs, then generate authentic bass and drums to accompany you. Perfect for making just jamming around more interesting and fun. Auto Chords is another banger. Import your music from YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Music, and the Spark app will auto-display its guitar chords in real time as you play. Easy controls let you slow down the song's tempo or loop difficult sections as you master playing it. On top of all of this, you can use the Spark as an interface. USB directly into your computer and access all the Spark tones, amp models, and effects for recording. All of this for only $299. Visit positivegrid.com/guitar nerds, enter to win a Spark, and check out all its incredible features.
Okay, Blake, repeat after me. Hello and welcome.
Hello and welcome.
To the Guitar Nerds Podcast.
To the Guitar Nerds Podcast.
The world's number one guitar podcast.
The world's number one... Wait a minute.
The world's number one guitar podcast, Blake.
The world's number one guitar podcast.
I'm your host, Blake Weiland.
I'm your host, Blake Weiland.
And I'm here entirely of my own free will and under no duress of the Guitar Nerds whatsoever.
I am here under my own free will and under no duress of the Guitar Nerds whatsoever.
Great. And we will get Joe to tidy that up in post. That's right. You heard correct. This is the Guitar Nerds Podcast. Man. My name is Jay Cross and I'm here with Matt Knight and the Tone Mob's very own podcast legend, Blake Weiland.
Can you get this guy to put that knife down?
The original guitar podcaster. I don't know at what point our timelines... Well, we... Blake, me and you met for the first time at NAMM 2017? Winter NAMM 2017.
2017? Yeah, maybe 2016. I can't remember.
Well, I started in August 2016 and NAMM 2017 was my first one. I think that's when I met you. But obviously, we'd been doing the podcast for quite a few years before that. But I don't know when you started doing... Obviously, Tone Mob was one of the original things that we remember... especially on social, on like Instagram and stuff. So when did you start doing yours?
So you guys beat me by a little bit, by maybe a year or so.
Okay. But Chasing Tone was around before, because you came into Chasing Tone later, didn't you?
I came into Chasing Tone later, yeah.
Yeah, and that probably predates what we were doing, I think.
I'm guessing it was right around the same time.
Yeah.
I think Chasing Tone, last month we celebrated the 7-year anniversary by having Travis Feaster on, who was one of the original hosts.
Of course. Yeah.
So I think, you know, it's a really close timeline because I was aware of you guys. So I know you were before me. Mm-hmm. Chasing Tone was the one that got me into doing it in the first place. And then I found 60 Cycle. And I think Chasing Tone, what is now Guitar Nerds, and 60 Cycle all started around the same time, along with one that was just called the Guitar Podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that one was kind of weird because I only caught a few episodes of it. And it was just like one guy driving in his car talking about guitar stuff. So it was kind of a weird show. I can't really comment like further. Maybe it changed, but he didn't seem to stick around very long.
I mean, I can't really criticize because basically when the GAC podcast started, it was the four of us sitting around in the back room of the shop drinking cheap cans of gin and tonic and talking about guitars, which, I mean, frankly, that's no different to what anybody else is doing. You know, it's still just as pathetic as anything else, you know. Just
100%.
A bunch of losers hanging out, drinking gins and talking about guitars.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not like, saying that too critically either, because my early episodes were recorded in a fuel lab with a train going by, you know. So, like... there's no hate on my part at all. It's just what I'm recalling from the content. And but yeah, I think there might have been some other things sprinkled in, but at the time, the timeline as I recall would be Chasing Tone, Guitar Nerds, and 60 Cycle all started really close to the same time. I started in 2015, so a little bit afterwards. And the reason I started was because I was like, well, these are all kind of banter-based shows. And there's no interview-based shows, at least that I was aware of at the time. And I was like, maybe I can fill that angle. And it's somehow worked.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you've had some, especially like over the last 9 months or so, this year, you've had some big, big names on there. Big names on the show over the last year or so. Kyle Gass from Tenacious D. I mean, that's enormous. That's absolutely fantastic. Misha Mansour, was that this week or last week?
Yeah, that was last week. Uh-huh.
I saw you had Brian Fallon on again as well. So, I mean, it seems to be going from strength to strength to strength. It's, you know, and I mean that metaphorically and literally because Blake Wyland is a very tonk geezer, as we say in the you know, if you're a fitness fanatic like me and Blake, we would refer to each other as tonk geezers. But you know, I'm not quite at that level yet. But no, things seem to be going really well, man.
It's been wild. You know, some of these guests. I think the real turning point as far as like, I don't want to say. You know, it's weird to put people in hierarchies, you know, and I don't like to do that.
Yeah, of course.
As far as notability goes and just, you know, people who were aware of them, it really didn't start happening until the first time I got Brian on. Brian's been on like 3 times, and we've become really good friends over the course of that, which has been amazing because he's also somebody I really respect and love as a musician as well. So that's been a real trip, but... Yet he was really, I think, the one that kicked off that. And then, you know, shortly thereafter, I had Frank from MyCam on. And then this year, the Kyle Gass episode's so crazy because a lot of these people, you know, I'm hunting for, obviously. I'm trying to find their PR people. I'm trying to find, you know, because they don't know who I am. But Kyle's people actually hit me up out of the blue, which was
nice.
Really weird. I was like, Kyle Gass? I'm like... Yeah, I'm going to talk to Kyle Gass. I don't even think he likes gear that much, but of course I'm going to talk to him, you know? So yeah, it's been wild. And the interview format is what I enjoy because I don't think I have I love gear clearly, but I don't think I quite have the level of keeping up with the news that I used to way that you guys do. And I get a lot of that from Chasing Tone because Brian and Richard are always sending, which is, actually something we should probably talk about when we get to
it. Yeah, definitely.
But they're always sending me topics and things. So I'm like, I'm very well informed, but not necessarily because of my own research.
Yeah, I mean, well, to be completely honest with you, mate, we are basically just reading off, press releases. Ours is all very scripted. Like we get sent the week's press releases, we read that out in a very monotonous voice, and then we go home. Like I'm not that informed. I just am able to read a press release. So see,
I very rarely get them anymore, and when I do, I'm like, nah, because what am I gonna do, you know? Am I going to be like, okay, this week I'm talking to, you know, XYZ pedal builder. What do you think about the new release from Orange? You know,
exactly.
Yeah, it just doesn't really fit.
I think, I don't know, the further I've gone on, the less I've had time to pay attention to what's happening, even though it is like part of my job. I definitely don't feel like I'm deep diving as watching as many videos as I used to. I also just think there's just so much stuff coming out at the moment. I've just sort of lost track. I think maybe because I haven't been in a guitar shop for so long. You know, like every so and you go in a guitar shop and you chat to the people you know and you see some stuff and you get some opinions and
And someone says, "Oh, have you checked out this or have you seen this? We just got it in."
Yeah.
Like, don't really get that opportunity quite so much.
No, I definitely feel like need a bit of that. I think that's why guitar shops will always be around. Of course, lots of people shop online now, but you can't replicate some of it without actually going in and getting hands-on with some stuff.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But I definitely pay less attention to what happens now than what I did do like 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, but I think also we're just immersed in it. So we're, you know, we don't have to really seek it out so much. You know, you guys are getting press releases. I get stuff, you know, pop up in my Instagram feed. Like, I'm going to see it, most likely. It seems hard to dodge oftentimes. You know, there's things that slip by your radar here and there. But when you work in this industry every single day, you're going to see 80% of the stuff, you know, without even having to research. And so that's been a lot of it for me. It's just like, you know, I like the guest format because I can talk about them. That's why I've changed the tagline of my show. It used to be like, it's just about the way I describe it. Now I'm like, welcome to the Tone Mob podcast, the show about guitar stuff occasionally sometimes. Because it might start there and it might end in, you know, I mean, sometimes it's really funny. I mean, the conversation, sometimes it's really weird, but sometimes it's really heavy. You know, addiction has been a reoccurring thing that's popped up multiple times on the show, and we really go down the rabbit hole, you know, as much as we can. And I don't want to limit the conversation in that way, you know?
No, of course. And I think you do a very good job of kind of letting people it's not like you're a investigative journalist who's there to try and get a hot take out of somebody. You're just allowing people the opportunity to say what's in their mind, and oftentimes that can be very therapeutic and also just really beneficial to other people. You know, that's the people who are listening who maybe don't necessarily have the courage to speak out about things that are affecting them, or haven't had the sort of opportunity to look inwards and think, oh yeah, this actually is something that affects me as well. Maybe this is a route that I can go down. It's and I think that in the creative industries especially, I mean, you don't have to look far to look at big name guitar players or vocalists or producers or anything who've struggled with addiction and throughout their lives. And it's important to talk about and bring these things out in the open when you can.
You know, it's interesting too, because I find that those are the most fascinating conversations and the things that, you know, not specifically addiction, but just broader, deeper topics. Those are the things that help me as a person. You know, I definitely was more close-minded when I started the podcast than I am now. And I want to continue that path, because it feels better to have a better understanding. To have those moments where it's like, oh, I thought that people that did that were this way, but now I understand they might be this way. Yeah. And just getting that different exposure can help you, you know, navigate your own troubles in a weird way. Not to try to make this a bigger deal than it is. It is still just a nerd rambling on the internet. But it is definitely changed my perspective on a lot of things. And also, you know, like you mentioned, Misha, when we did the Patreon episode or the bonus content now, because I guess it's not just Patreon, but he was like, I can't believe we're talking about this. You know, I never get to talk about these things. We were like literally exploring the concept of whether or not we have free will.
You know? Right, okay.
And he's like, that was mostly generated by him because of some stuff he's been reading. You know, we started with aliens, as we do, and then we
of course, classic.
Who knows
the classic
where.
The classic time mob jumping off point.
Yes, my favorite, because it always, I mean, whether, not to sidetrack it too soon, but regardless of how you feel about that subject, so everyone has an opinion on it, and it's interesting to explore why they have whatever opinion it is. And it's a good way to end up in places like, do we have free will? So
yeah.
Anyway, that's that.
Yeah, but that's cool, man. So along with you mentioned Chasing Tone as well. So that is obviously something that you've been heavily involved with for the last however many years it is now, 6 years
somewhere or so? Somewhere in that, maybe five and a half. I basically started around episode 100, and it took Brian and I a while, you know, maybe 20-ish episodes or more, to get our rapport established, even though we talk. We were just still trying to figure out, you know, how this was going to work, because him and Travis and Max, which were the original Chasing Tone crew, they were already friends hanging out together every single day.
Yeah. And I can't remember, but I assume they were all in like the same room at the time as well, right?
Yep.
Yeah, which is just, that was one of the things I was going to bring up actually, is, you know, how have you kind of, presumably the pandemic hasn't kind of change the way that you do a lot of that, because it was all remote anyway. I mean, for Guitar Nerds, we really, you know, I don't think we struggled necessarily, but it was a bit of a shock for us, I would say, Matt, wouldn't you? Because not for you, I suppose, because you were always at the end on the blower anyway.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day, funny enough, and because I realized I'd lived in my current house for 7 years and 10 months I've been on the electoral roll here, which is the longest I've lived anywhere apart from growing up in my family home. And I was like, for that 7 years and 10 months, we have almost done the podcast remotely. I've been doing it remotely for, I would say, maybe 5 years. Because as soon as I left, longer than that, because I left I started working for Roland 5 years ago, and I was at Anderton's for 18 months, so 6.5 years. Because obviously once I stopped working at GAC, I couldn't record it. So 6.5 years we've been... I've been doing it in another room and sort of used to it. But was thinking about, you know, we've tried doing it live, we've tried doing it over video, and I think we actually have a kind of solution that, that works. And for the last 18 months over the pandemic, I think it's been pretty good to use TriCast and do it remotely, and it's come out pretty well.
I obviously miss my opportunity to badmouth you after with Mark and Joe after we hang up the phone on you, but we've just got a separate group, so we just text each other. Just like, can't believe he was talking about his luscious beard again. Oh, God, it's so annoying. But no, bringing it back to you, Blake. Presumably, what's been going on over the last 18 months kind of affected your working? I guess with Chasing Tone in particular, it certainly hasn't, because you've been able to just carry on as per.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't really impacted me hardly at all as far as my process goes. I was starting to do more and more in person. Like, I was finally getting to go to shows and go backstage and hang out with people and record there, which I was just like, this is...
Oh, like so recording interviews with people IRL. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh, man, which was so mind-blowing to me, because I'd never been backstage at some of these venues I'd been going to for years. I was like, this is so cool. And... I got to interview Tepe from Thrice, you know, in person in January, and a few others here and there over the years. But
where was that? Was that a venue that you'd? Because of course, if anybody knows anything about Blake Weiland, they know that Blake Weiland is the world's biggest Thrice fan. So, was the venue that you saw them? Was that somewhere that you'd seen them before, like just going sort of quote unquote as a fan?
Yes, 100%. I've seen them there.
Amazing.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe 6-7 times at that venue. So, it was really trippy to, you know, be out in the crowd, and then, you know, Jess, my friend Jess, was with me, and he's also a massive fan. And so we're like,
you told Jess to watch the car while she went backstage and recorded, right?
Of course. No, actually, we did it together. we did that one together. He came, you know, it was like, we can just walk back there. No one's going to stop us. And we could just walk back. And it was weird as a fan to experience those things. And so that was just starting to happen on a more regular basis. And I was like, this is the coolest job in the world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, this is so awesome. And I interviewed Dave Haas, who used to play with the Loved Ones and has been doing solo stuff for quite a while.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, the Loved Ones. I was a big fan of the Loved Ones. That first record, I saw their first UK tour. They came over with Strike Anywhere in like 2000. Was it the first? I think it was first in like 2004 or something. And just after that first record came out, and it was just like
so good.
This band is unbelievable. And of course, he was in Painted Black as well. Yep. Another one of my fave bands. So big fan of Dave Haas. Yeah.
Reverend Guitars have kicked off 2021 with their first ever S-Type guitar. In true Reverend style, this cracker of a guitar features classic looks juxtaposed with modern electrics. Introducing the Gil Paris GPS signature model from Reverend Guitars. Whilst on first glance, the pickup arrangement looks fairly standard for an S-Type. In fact, each of the single coils is a Fishman Fluent single-width pickup. These can be switched with a push-pull tone control between two voicings, a vintage voice, the classic Airy 50 single coil sound, and a hot Texas voice for a hotter, punchier, more modern alternative. Check out the GPS and all of Reverend Guitar's mouth-watering models at reverendguitars.com.
Yeah, he's a super cool guy, and that was also one we did in person, and it was my wife and I, actually.
Yeah.
And then that was the last show that I saw.
Right.
You know, we hung out for a little while, we did the podcast, we saw the show, it was fantastic, we gushed about Les Paul Juniors together for, who knows how long, and then literally, like, maybe in my mind, it's the next day, but it might have been the next two or three days. That's when everybody's Instagram feed was nothing but show cancellations, including Dave. Dave's popped up. Oh, we got to cancel our shows. You know, we don't know what's going on with this pandemic. And that was like, for me, that was essentially the beginning of lockdown. Even though lockdown hadn't happened yet, it was about to happen. And it was like, no more shows. Like, what do you mean no more shows? This is what we do, is go to shows.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it was really surreal. And from then on, it's been obviously nothing but remote. And that the pandemic, in a weird way for my workflow, has made it easier, because early on, I'd be like, okay, I record like this. And they were like, I don't understand how to work any of this stuff. What's going on? No, everyone was confused and didn't know. Now everybody like knows how to work it. So I'm just like, here.
Everybody's a Zoom expert. Everybody's got like a good pair of, like a decent pair of headphones, a good webcam.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
So the explanation of that has become severely lessened. I rarely have to explain anything anymore. So that saves me some time. So that's been the only real change for me.
So, but just going back to shows for a sec, is that something that has kind of, is it on the horizon of coming back? I mean, I've been lucky enough to go to a couple of gigs over the last month or so, and it's been a bit of a weird experience, like being a show, being inside with a load of people. But you know, I'm double vaccinated. The vaccination rates around here are really high. The risk is minimal, and if you don't feel safe, you wear a mask or you don't go. And it's like, you know, I guess it's taking that first step, but that's certainly how it is here. I mean, have you been to anything? Is there anything that's like on the in your peripheral vision that might actually happen?
I have not been to anything yet. That's partially because I haven't had anybody show up in town that I desperately needed to see yet, at least not as far as I'm aware.
So Portland is probably that's like where people play, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Okay.
But I am going to Nashville in a few weeks, and I'm really, really excited because, you know, over the course of this, I became friends with Brian from Lucero, who's another one of my favorite bands.
Yeah, of course.
And they're playing the Ryman while we're going to be there. And he's like, come hang out. So that might be my first show back, which would be a wild way to go back.
Yeah, totally. Wow.
So that's what's on my horizon. Me and my wife and I are so excited that that potentially is going to happen. I don't want to say anything's a for sure thing anymore, because who knows? But
no,
potentially that's going to happen.
But, you know, I guess at the very least, the likelihood is you'll be able to walk down like that main Broadway. That's the name of the street in Nashville, right?
Yeah, I mean,
down the Broadway.
The Ryman's right off Broadway. Yeah. I do everything in my power to avoid Broadway.
Yeah, I know, but you gotta walk down there. Like,
no, I've done it so many times.
You gotta do it. Like the first night that you're there. I mean, I've only been twice, I guess. But like, oh man, you walk down that street and there's just like country bar after country bar. It's like, you know, 52 telly after 52 telly after. Oh wow, that's that person's playing a 52 telly into an AC 30. Oh, okay, now we're back to the deluxe. Yeah, that's a deluxe. Oh wow, that person's playing into a Princeton. You know, it's like, but it's always 52 tellies, mm-hmm. And I mean, that is quite the sight to behold. It really is.
Yeah, I don't know when the last time you were there, but you know, it's changed a lot. You know, it's always been a central hub for music.
Yeah.
But now it's really changed into like central hub for bro country, which, as you know, is the bane of my existence as a country music fan. I cannot tolerate the bro country. And, you know, so much that like the Grun Guitars building was sold to Dierks Bentley and is now a Dierks Bentley bar. And like, there's only like two of the, or three maybe, of the original establishments that are still around. Oh, Roberts, wow, okay. And Tootsie's. All the rest have been turned into like Kid Rock's got a bar, and like,
yeah, I'm just like, I was gonna say Kid Rock's got a bar there, isn't he?
Yeah, which I'm just like, I can't do it.
I think last time I was there, that had just opened. So that was Summer NAMM 2019. I think that had, yeah, I think that just opened, and it's like four floors. I think it's just mad though that Nowhere else have I been where you can see a venue that's got four floors and a different band on every floor playing different music, but from the outside you hear it like all at once. I mean, standing on that... I remember the last time I was there, the last night I was there, me and a friend had been out drinking or whatever, and then we just stood on the corner at the bottom of the street and just like watched the world go by for like an hour. It's just like...
Wow.
The most... It's just like... a really weird aquarium of people. You know,
how often
just...
did you hear the term "woo" in that hour?
Yeah, there's it's what, the hen party capital of the USA or something like that.
Yeah, it is indeed.
So interestingly though, there John Bollinger, who writes for Premier Guitar, wrote a really cool article recently about him being a gigging musician in Nashville, and talking about like how you kind of make it in some ways, and the gigs that you do and how many gigs you do and traveling to gigs and what kind of stuff you need to take with you. And I worked with a guy at Anderton's once who had come over from America. He wasn't from Nashville, but had lived there for a couple of years, and he said that most people get their start by depping for people, but there's so much going on. And I think this was kind of maybe before people were kind of posting stuff on Facebook like, I need a dep for this or a dep for that. He said that you'd literally go to bars, because they all have open fronted windows at the bottom, and he was the drummer, and he'd wait by the window and he'd just like lean in and be like, oh, do you need a toilet break or a cigarette break? And you'd literally jump on the drums for like 15 minutes.
Wow.
Just to give people a break. Because, you know, they play from, like, some bands might play from, like, 10 in the morning till, like, 6 o'clock at night. Like, basically non-stop.
Yeah, it's unreal. So,
I don't think I've ever played more than a 25-minute set in my life. Like, the idea of doing, you know, playing in a band as a 9-to-5 job just is, like, just I just can't even begin to imagine it. I cannot believe it. It's crazy.
Introducing the KMA Machines Guardian of the Worm. An incredibly flexible, ultimately shapeable high gain distortion and noise gate for guitarists looking for complete control over their drive tone. Fader loaded double foot switch effects unit features three separate clipping modes so you can find the tonal foundations that are right for you. A simple, high-performance Blackma VCA-based noise gate with the option of an external trigger input for noise gate control. A highly configurable 4-band active EQ with variable center frequencies. Three distinct types of high-mid control for tone shaping. An effects loop between distortion and noise gate for signal chain flexibility. An internal control for input filter signal trigger source and noise gate response. And relay-based soft switching with variable gate switching modes. This is a comprehensive distortion shaping tool for those who want complete dominance over their tone. Check out the Guardian of the Worm by KMA Machines at kma-machines.com.
Yeah, and they do some ridiculous sets. And he was saying, you'd lean in and be like, do you need some cover? And you'd probably do like 10, 15 minutes. You'd do like a few songs. Drummer would come back. You'd leave your number and maybe they'd give you a call for like, oh, I've got booked for a session and I'm supposed to be doing this other gig. Can you like cover? And I'm pretty sure in this interview, John Bollinger's saying that like, you just have to have a repertoire of like a bunch of songs that you'll always have to play.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I do remember, I have a memory of a functions band at one of those gigs where I was with a friend of the podcast, Wes Steed, who now lives in Nashville.
He does indeed, yeah. Works for Rivola Guitars.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And
so, Blake, if you find yourself with some time, I don't know how familiar you are with those guitars, but we should hit you up with Wes, because he's worked with us at GAC and moved out to Nashville for the second most popular reason that you move out to Nashville, and that is of course he met a girl and they're now married and you know it's really really they've got like you know they've got a cat and a really nice life together. But he works for Rivola and is involved with them. So, like, you know, if you wanted to check that out, I'm sure he'd like to. Yeah. But that's not really a conversation for the podcast.
Right, well, interestingly, I was going to say that actually the first time I went to Nashville was with Wes, and that is where he met his now wife.
Oh yeah, of course. Wow.
And yeah, we went to a gig in one of those bars where, yeah, it was just covers band that was playing for like, I don't know, 8 hours, and they were like, tip us for a song. It's like they had no set. They were like, you put $20 in the tip bucket and then you could just name a song. And I think someone named Weezer.
Do you know You Suffer But Why by Napalm Death?
Well, yeah. Someone said, can you do Rapper's Delight? And then,
okay.
And I think the guitarist had gone off for a break and there was just a bass player and a drummer. And the bass player was like, yeah, maybe. And what they would do is they all had iPads, right? They would Google it, find chords really quickly, and then like one of them would just be like, right, okay, let's just go. And they would just...
Let's give it a go.
And he found the lyrics and he's like, right, I think I know how the bass line goes. And the bass player pulled out the bass line straight away and then rapped the entire song from lyrics on an iPad.
While playing the bass line, yeah. Unbelievable.
And I was just like... Yeah, that is the level of musicianship that I think you have on some of these things. It's pretty mad.
It's bonkers there. I mean, the old joke is like, don't let the guy bagging your groceries like touch your guitar if you're in Nashville because he's probably better than you. Like, it's unreal how many guitar players there are and how they're just worlds above most other cities. Just as you could just throw a rock and hit somebody who's obscenely talented there.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, almost every single person that works for Stringjoy plays. I think there's like one or two that don't play and they like are recording engineers or something. You know, it's insane the level of talent that exists in that city.
Yeah. Well, and Stringjoy, so just to touch on that, you mentioned that obviously you're going to Nashville. You're going to be able to hang out with the Stringjoy crew.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I'm like super publicly allowed to say why I'm going there, just because some people like to keep their lives more private.
Of course.
And so I won't spill that beans.
You're going for the secret guitar convention, I assume, is the... Yes,
super secret.
We were invited, but unfortunately, it's just really, really secret.
Well, you're going to Skype in, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah, because we have to formulate how we're going to take over the entire world.
One step at a time, that's how, one step at a time.
Exactly. But I will be, hanging out at the Stringjoy shop for a while. You know, there's a bunch of people there that I need to meet in person that I haven't got to talk to in a while. And, you know, it's just a whole thing. I'm going to go do something. This is very interesting for everyone. I'm going to do something, and then I'm going to go over here and do something, and then I'm going to go over here and do something. But I will be hanging out with Grant and Karen from Big Ear to do some content with them for an upcoming thingy.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah. Of course, the Albie was, that's been a kind of like modulation pedal du jour for some time. Like great sounding pedal.
Yeah, great pedal, great people, and we've got something fun coming from them, and that's all I can say about that. But yeah, ooh, I'll be in Nashville doing all kinds of, yeah, I know, I'm sorry. I'll be in Nashville doing Nashville things, and I love Nashville. It's literally my home away from home. If I was going to move anywhere, that is where I would go to. So
nice.
I'm excited.
Nice. Cool, man. Cool. Well, I had some news this week, which is quite exciting. I don't know whether you guys would have seen, but I posted up on Instagram that I got a new guitar this week.
Unbelievable.
Which is the first time I've had a new guitar in a year or so, feels like some time, and I've been playing it loads. It's absolutely wicked. I got a Squire Classic Vibe Bass 6 in, of course, the guitar's color, shell pink, with a shell pink matching head cap. I tell you what, fellas, that shell pink It really makes all the difference. It really bloody sings. It sounds amazing. And I've been just noodling about over the weekend, plugged into my Tone Master Super Reverb that I got recently as well. And I had intended to, you know, with Joe not being on the podcast, and if you remember the Guitar Nerds Facebook group, you'll see Joe's had some kind of family stuff going on, which he's just needed some time away, which is why this rabble of teenagers are holding the fort for the time being. But I did go into this weekend fully well-intentioned to spend a bit of time putting a load of pedals through the Super Reverb and just like, oh, how's it sound with this drive? How's it sound with this delay? But like, I just was playing it, plugged in, reverb turned up, bit of trem. Then I turned the trem down, just have some reverb. It just sounds so good, man. It's so good. And it's because it's a bass six, it's still just tuned E to E. And so both the chords.
Same,
I know how to play.
Say, same chords. They're even the same notes, Jay.
They're the same notes. It's all the same shape. It's so easy, but it just sounds so different. And because it's a bass six and it's so much lower, one of the things that I really like about it is that you can basically just play the chords that you know and you just play them slowly and it sounds well moody. And it also sounds quite jazzy. So if you do hit a wrong note, which is something that I do regularly, you just hit it again a second time and it sounds like it was intentional.
That's like, what jazz is. If you play it once, it's a mistake. If you play it twice, you meant to do it. And that's what you got to do. And do it three times, and then they're like, well, this guy's serious.
Wow.
He's
hit that bum note, and he's hit it again. He really means it. He's hammering it home, that bum note.
Yeah, and if you do it four times, then it's gone back to mistake. That's it. You've gone too far. It's definitely a mistake.
Absolutely.
You don't realise
you're
in the wrong key by that point.
No.
I'm just sitting here in amazement that you know both of the chords. I'm still trying to figure it out. I don't understand.
No, I tell you what, I know both of them, E and A. I tell you, and they are good. I'll show you A later if you want. I know you can play E, but if you need a little tip on A, it's one finger. That's all you need, actually. As long as you don't mind playing it a bit wrong, it's it's good. It's,
all I can do is E minor. I can't quite get that extra finger on there.
Just the two fingers.
That's all I really know how to do. So
well you know, slowly but surely, and honestly it doesn't matter. As long as you get out of playing guitar what you want to get out of it, you just play that two finger E minor and that's absolutely fine. That's all you need. Bosch a capo on there and it's probably E major. I don't know, is that how it works? I don't know. Probably not.
I don't know. What is that? What does that even mean? I'm so confused.
I think that's just on notes and tuning, you know. Even for me, someone who knows more than two chords, but definitely not more than five chords, my friend Alex Hutchins, who's amazing player, but he obviously tunes in fourths.
All right, mate. Drop some in there.
Who he tunes in fourths, which a lot of these kind of like modern jazz fusion players are tuning, because fourths tuning makes more sense than tuning in fifths, which is what guitars are normally tuned in. But when he had to go out on tour with an artist, obviously everything was written in standard. And he was like, I can still play in fourths, but there was one riff that used open strings. He was like, I can't have a guitar in standard tuning and then like relearn to play because I play in a different tuning. So his guitar has an extra fret on just the top E and B strings. So he can tune the guitar in fourths, but still play chords in a normal bar chord, open
what?
Chords. Yeah, it's so...
Where's the extra fret? At the top or the bottom?
At the top. So behind the nut. They've cut the nut out and then added an extra fret with the stone nut.
What? What are you talking about? That is wild.
Because in fourths, when you basically fourth tuning, the E and B are tuned down a tone. Down a tone or down a semitone? Down a semitone. So you can't play like open chords or anything because the top two strings are out there. And so he's got a lower fret that allows him to like play those chords, but then still maintain all the shapes. Because the weird thing is about tuning in fourths, all those scales that you know, they always have to shift on the
both scales. The scale. let's be honest.
Well, the scale that you know, you have to shift your like fingering style on the B strings, because obviously that's where the tuning changes. In fourth tuning, everything's the same. So all the shapes are symmetrical across all strings. So from an actual practicality point of view, it makes sense. And that's why like violins and cellos and all that are tuned in fourths. So guitar is just a weird and wrong instrument.
But I do hear what you're saying. But have you ever just like turned up an amp really loud and then just played an E chord? Because that sounds wicked.
It does sound good.
You can't do that on a violin.
you can't plug
a violin into a twin and play an E chord and it sound wicked. You know, it doesn't work, I'm afraid.
Through a space echo,
yeah.
Job done.
Yeah. So I got a new guitar. It's really exciting. And what I think is most exciting about it is I got it before Joe Branton got his, which is just, you know, the icing on the cake, if you ask me, because Joe has ordered one. Did you order one as well, Matt?
No, me and Joe went halves. Well, Joe paid for it and I'm just going to steal it, so...
Right, okay, fine. Yeah, well, like I say, the best part of it all is that I got mine first, and I am just sending loads of pictures of my new guitar to Joe because I never miss an opportunity to kick a man when he's down. I think it's an important moment of friendship building, you know?
It's so weird. You know, Matt, isn't this strange? This is like almost like if you were bragging about getting a new boss pedal before anyone else.
Yeah. That never happens.
It's not quite the same as that. No, I guess I was just further up the queue, but yeah, I'm very excited. It's been wicked. The roasted neck is lovely, and or tinted neck, I guess it's not roasted, but it's tinted neck, and it's yeah, it's wicked. I always said I was going to buy basics when the Squire Vim Mod basics were announced in about 2000 and I don't know, 11, I guess that was, or 12. No, because I think we were podcasting at the time when they came out, weren't we, Matt? So 2014, yeah, I think it was probably when they launched. I always said I was going to buy one, and I never did. And I'm glad I didn't, because the classic vibe is amazing. It's so much better. So it's very, very cool.
So good. So. What a cool just that time in the 60s when they were just doing, well, this kind of thing just had never been invented. Like, imagine like talking about like, what are we going to do? What are we going to do for guitar? What can we do? It's like basics, you know, and just, I mean, just the concept of an electric bass, you know, you just think that,
yeah,
bass guitars just didn't exist, like, because everyone played an upright double bass, and then someone's like, Leo Fender was like,
Leo Fender, yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah,
someone, yeah, and, some guy,
someone, yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know if you've heard of this man before,
you know, and that guy, and he wasn't even a musician, you know. I think it's, no. I think that's, yeah, it's pretty damn amazing, but yeah, always this kind of new concepts at that time, you know, especially in the late 50s and 60s, must have just been madness. Imagine being a salesperson on the road then, going to your, like, you know, your dealers and being like, yeah, we've got this new concept, the electric bass. Like,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, but so I think I mentioned this on the podcast once before. I mean, I'm sure I have, because I take every opportunity to talk about Chaz and Dave, which Blake might be, I don't know if you're familiar with the works of Chaz and Dave. This might be a cultural barrier here, but we can fill you in later. But I read an interview with Chaz Hodges where he reckoned that he was the first person in the UK to have an electric bass, because he got Hofner President. So this would have been in the 60s, you know, this would have been a long time after the The launch of, well, actually, I think that them was there a Hofner president in the 50s? There probably was, but this is like late 50s, early 60s. He was, you know, a teenager, but doing gigging. He was, he'd done a bit of playing bass for Gene Vincent when he came over, and he played bass in Jerry Lee Lewis's band on his first or second UK tour. But he reckoned that he was the first person in the UK to have a electric bass, because he got this bass and then all of a sudden he was never want for a job ever again, because people saw him playing this incredible sounding electric bass, and all of the upright bass players who were sessioning for big name artists when they came over no longer had a job, because everyone wanted the cool rock and roll upright bass, electric bass, which is really interesting when you think about it now, because very rarely do these kind of leaps in technology catch on straight away. You know, when the Helix first dropped, were people kicking out their guitar player, their session guitar players, because they had a AC30 or a DSL40, because, you know, Steve from Dagenham had a Helix. You know, I don't think that's what was going on, but very interesting to think about.
Your listeners might enjoy that I've been taking this opportunity, because I had no context for who this was at all. To Google, and you know, I feel like I got a really, really good handle on who Chaz and Dave are, simply off of this sentence right here, and I really, okay. I really feel like I have a grasp on what this is.
Go ahead.
They were most notable as creators and performers of a musical style labeled Rockney. I feel like that's all I need to know.
It literally is. It literally is. And it sounds exactly what you expect it to sound like.
I'm in.
I will be honest, some of the lyrical content maybe hasn't aged quite, you know, you probably couldn't put out a song nowadays called Rabbit, which is all about how their partners just carried on rabbiting on, kept on talking too much. You know, probably couldn't put that song out nowadays, but they were great musicians, and you know, really just an iconic band, and really one of my favorites. Although you do have to kind of suspend your 2021 feelings every now and again when you're listening to them, but yeah, Rabbit. great band. I'll send you a video, Blake, of Chaz Hodges, who played piano in this band, in a one-off band that he did called The Rockers, which was, if I remember correctly, the drummer from, now who was it, I can't remember who it was, who was on drums, but there was Phil Lynott on bass, Chat from Thin Lizzy, Chaz Hodges on piano, and what's his name from Wizard on guitar, Roy Wood from Wizard and ELO on guitar. Just this absolutely amazing medley of like rock and roll tunes. Like they play Johnny Be Good with Phil Lynott singing. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And I'll send you that video later. But yeah, proper banger. But anyway, Joe's going to be absolutely furious when he finds out that we're talking about Chaz and Dave again in his absence. So we should move swiftly on from some of the, you know, most culturally iconic musicians of the 70s to one of the most culturally iconic artists of all time. So I put this in the podcast notes, and we had a brief chat about it before, but I think it's really amazing that something that I saw on Instagram this week that maybe some other people caught, and if you didn't, I would highly recommend going to check out, but Madonna, so one of the most iconic artists of all time, really, you know, one of the biggest selling artists ever, just like countless number ones, just this powerhouse of music and powerhouse of fashion and like, you know, cultural icon. And she put up a picture of her on her Instagram this week, just doing some home recording. Just, you know, the new album is just being put together in what looks like a spare bedroom with some acoustic soundproofing panels, slapdash put up on the wall, and her boyfriend, I think it's her boyfriend, just with some Audio Technica headphones straight into a MacBook Pro. Basically, Madonna is doing everything that we're doing in terms of home recording at the moment. And I think that is just an absolutely incredible advert for how far home recording has come. And if anybody ever gets any sense of kind of imposter syndrome when doing your home recording, just look at this picture and be like, wow, Madge is doing it. That's wicked.
Yeah.
I can do it too. You know, it's quality, I think.
I think, so, yeah, you're right. Madonna's kind of place in history is pretty mad. I just sort of Google it here, and it's come up with top 10 records as the queen of pop turned 60, and not like records as in terms of Guinness World Records. Highest grossing music tour for a female. Most remixed artist of all time.
Most remixed artist of all, that is amazing.
Yeah, with her songs being remixed 324 times as of March 2018. This is from a couple of years ago, but I still don't think any of this has been topped. Yeah, her highest grossing tour was 408 million. Largest gathering of people dressed as Madonna. most US top 40 singles by a female artist, 44 singles in total. Wow. Largest 44. Environmental. Sorry?
44
top 40 singles.
I mean, you say that that's the most by women, but I mean, that's good. She's got to be in like the top.
She's in the top
there, right? Got to be. I mean, Beatles and Elvis, I assume,
I think,
are ahead of her.
I think it's basically.
Can there be any?
No, I think it's basically Beatles and Elvis, and then Madonna, which is pretty.
That's
mad.
Amazing. Yeah.
Most number one albums by a female artist based on UK Albums Chart. 11 number one albums. Most costume changes in a film for a character. She is in a film where she plays Eva Perón, a wife of a former Argentine president. And in that film, she changes...
Wait, isn't that Evita?
I don't know. It doesn't say that. Oh, Evita. Yeah, musical drama Evita.
Yeah. Okay.
She changes costume 85 times, including 42 hair designs and 56 pairs of earrings. Oldest artist to simultaneously top the UK and singles and album charts at 47. She had a number one album.
Wow,
and a
okay.
single. And best-selling female recording artist of all time. Only beaten overall by the Beatles, Michael Jackson and Elvis Presley. She has sold an estimated 335 million albums.
Okay, so, you know, when I said don't worry about imposter syndrome, don't compare, maybe, you know, ignore some of those records, because that's all very impressive.
I think the one thing about Madonna, I'm a relatively big Madonna fan, but not as big as some of the super fans out there. And she does, you know, from a very, very early on, like artistically, you know, her style, her looks, the way that she wrote and recorded the music was all very much her. I think she's had writers on some tracks, but she does write the majority of the music. I'm pretty sure like a Virgin, I think, was mostly her. And yeah, obviously her records have, especially the stuff from the 80s and the 90s, just obviously has this huge production value. My favourite Madonna song being Like a Prayer, because if you haven't listened to that song in a while, go back and listen to the production, because it's amazing. Guy Pratt of obviously Pink Floyd now played bass on that record, and it's one of the most iconic bass lines of all time. And I only know that because, obviously know it's really iconic, but I only know he played it because he told me that he used a Boss OC2 on it. And I was like, oh, that's good to know. So, but yeah, I think just now you can do so much at home recording. I think that is the amazing thing. Like me and Joe have talked about it on previous podcasts and even did a series on it. It is so easy to get a really good sound at home. And there are, occasions of bands. I think if I remember rightly, it was Hot Chip, their first record. I think they recorded it all at home. And then when they got signed, they were like, cool, we can go into the studio and re-record it. And then when they re-recorded that, they were like, doesn't have the same vibe and the same character. I think they scrapped it.
And just went with the home recorded version.
I've got a feeling
that okay.
Potentially one of the Strokes records was like that as well. But yeah, I think there's quite a few cases of basically bands doing loads at home and then going into the studio. And going to the studio now is a costly expense. I think there was a time, and there is an interview with Guy Pratt talking about it when he did that session. He's like, recording sessions then cost like tens of thousands of pounds a day. And these artists would be in the studio for months. And people just don't have that money now. I think record labels we're not going to throw $1 million at recording a record. How cheap and how quick can we put music out, I guess, in some ways. And so much, so much pop, I guess, is like session work. It's like, right, it's like bring all the session musicians in. They record everything and they never see the singer that they're playing for. Which is a pretty mad concept in itself. But yeah, it's quite cool to see, I think, and shows that she is generally quite passionate about music. She's always playing guitar on stage. I think the last time I remember seeing a video of her playing was like, I think she was playing Led Zeppelin on an ESP Flying V, like backstage.
Wow, really?
Yeah. I think there was definitely an Instagram clip of her playing Led Zeppelin on a Flying V at one point, which is bizarre to say the least. And also, I think
that's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, she's not exactly the greatest guitar player in the world, but.
All right, mate, calm down. I mean, how many, working in a guitar shop, how many botched versions of Stairway to Heaven did you hear?
Yeah,
you
know,
I'm sure she's in the top, I would say she'd be in the top 500 people who I've heard play that song. So, and I'm certainly not in the top 500 people who play that song. So, yeah.
I'm guessing she knows more chords than I do.
We've already deduced that you only know E minor, mate. Yeah. But mm-hmm. I tell you what, the whole time you've been talking there, Matty, all I've been thinking is, Blake, you need to make some calls, mate. You need to get Madonna on the time mop. Find out what the deal is with this ESP Flying V. That's what I want to know.
I want to know. Yeah, what's going on with that?
Explorer, you said, Matty. Yeah.
It's such an interesting thing that it's been a while since I've been on this show, and it's been a while since Brandon came on. But the last time Joe came on, he was one of the people that really helped kick me into like, actually, man, I got to do some recording. Early in 2021, I released my first solo record, and my listeners are so sick of hearing me talk about it. But that was due to so many of my guests, and Joe being a big one, like talking about recording at home and how, I'm sitting around going like, this embarrassment of year that is just here, not, I mean, it brings me a lot of joy, but I'm not doing anything with it. And so, learning that process and going through that, I'm still far from an expert, but I'm so much more comfortable now doing it. And I think everybody should do it. I'm really a big believer in that. I don't want to pull back the curtain too much, but I already have talked about this on my show once or twice. One of the songs on there is literally of a resonator guitar. I came up with this little piece and I was like, that's cool. I'll record it real quick so I don't forget it. And I threw my phone in front of me, recorded it real fast, and was listening back through headphones. And I was like, I wonder. And I just uploaded it to my DAW and started messing with it. and putting effects on it. And I got done with it and I went, I think that's good. I think I'm just going to roll with that. And that is some people's favorite track.
Yeah.
It's called Purple Skies. And it's all, the whole thing's strange. But the point being is, like, you never know. Like, capture everything you can. You never know what you might be able to do with it. We just have access to such powerful tools that we take for granted all the time. And, you know, we just need to create stuff. That's what's beautiful about technology.
Yeah.
And I, actually, speaking of your solo record, which of course is American Cyclops, is the name of the band. I thought it was really interesting that you, because you premiered it on the Tone Mob, and like you basically put out, you did it almost like a listening party. It, you know, there's been a lot of talk about artists doing listening parties recently, but you put it out as an episode of the Tone Mob, and that is how I listened to it for the first time. And I just thought it was really interesting the way that you you know, it was just out there, and people I guess had to listen to it in the way that you had intended for it to be listened to. Because unlike, and we've talked about this before, the idea of modern music being listened to in a more kind of play, but by songs being playlisted and this, that, and the other. But you put it out as an episode of a podcast, and so you had to listen to it the whole way through. And I wonder, like, is that something that you think you'd do again, or do? You know, because it's now on Spotify. And actually, I just pulled it up on Spotify, and as you say, Purple Skies is the top song. Funnily enough, I don't know if you knew that, but it is actually the top song that's on there. But you know, is that something you'd do again, putting it out as like a single piece that people are kind of forced to listen to? Sounds a bit too aggressive, but like, I thought it was a very interesting way to premiere your record. Is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few different pieces to that puzzle.
Yeah.
The main being, I had this idea probably a year or more before I did that, but I wasn't thinking of it for me. I was thinking of the conundrum that we're all faced with, which is, you know, streaming rates suck. And it's very, very difficult to, you know, make a living from that. And I was trying to imagine, I thought about podcasting in the sense that, and I've said this on the show many times too, where, you know, you guys didn't start this with a record label. You know, I didn't start my show with any kind of support from anybody other than the guests and the listeners, and just keep doing it and just keep doing it. And I got to thinking, like, what about some of these more established artists that have like fan, and they don't have to be huge, but, you know, maybe some of the people I've interviewed or so on and so forth. Like, I was like, you know, Spotify is where people listen to music and podcasts these days.
Yeah.
What's different about it? You're uploading a digital file to the interwebs and people go find it and download it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, if you already have
like an audience. Yeah.
Why would you not like do what I did, which is, I teamed up with a sponsor and said, hey, listen, I'm going to put this record out and it's going to be in this format. So it kind of makes sense as a podcast episode. Like, it just seems to me that artists could use the RSS feed and podcast, you know, ecosystem to creatively release their music in ways that are not that much different for the consumer, if that makes any sense. The consumer could still go on their phone and download this thing, but maybe there's a deal or a contract or something where the artist could actually be, you know, more fairly compensated for their work. And so for mine, I went to somebody I was already partnered with and said, hey, it'll be up here for the first 3 months. This is where everyone will listen
to it. This is where you can listen to it.
Yeah. And it worked, you know. It's not like I made insane amounts of money on it or anything like that, but it ended up being, at the end of the day, a profitable endeavor, at least a little bit, which is not something I ever thought would be possible with a release that I would do. And the reason I ended up having to do it myself is because the hesitancy of so many of the artists and labels and different people I would pitch it to. And I wasn't pitching to them like, hey, premiere it on my show, although I have done that since then. I was more saying like, hey, because I'm part of this podcast network. I'm like, what if this band did their next release as a podcast and you could partner up with XYZ company to make it happen? And everyone is so hesitant to try it because it's new.
Well, just to try something different. Yeah. And I think so much of that comes from what we, you know, what we've talked about in the past about how like the playlistification of music, like that's how songs get big now, is they get big as, you know, 3.5 minute hits on a playlist or 45 second snaps on a tick as like the back in music on a TikTok or whatever. And what you're doing is obviously so far away from that, that I thought what you did by putting it out as a podcast, and actually I hadn't clocked that you had, you know, you'd got like a standalone sponsor for the episode, but it makes so much, I mean, ever the entrepreneur, I tell you what, honestly, bloody always hustling. But I just think, I thought it was such a smart idea. And really, I don't see why as a concept it couldn't be picked up by other people. You know, at a later date, because it's such, listening to a podcast and, you know, going onto your podcast app is such a different experience to putting on an episode of putting up Spotify, putting up Apple Music, or even like listening on YouTube. You know, it's such a different experience you've got, especially with you introducing and closing the episode, what it was. It's such a different experience, and people are going to be more engaged than if it was just like, oh, here's the link to my new band's record on Spotify.
Well, so you asked if I was ever going to do it again. And so that's an interesting thing. So the next thing I'm going to do, it will be, I don't know that I'll do it that way again, because it's more of an EP.
And it's quite long though, isn't it? The record?
This like record, you know, minutes or so. I ended up calling this one a record because I intended to release it as an EP, and by the time I got done, it was like, 40 minutes long. I'm like, this is an album. But my next one, I'm doing a Halloween EP that's going to be even more messed up and like strictly to scare everyone. That's like the entire goal, which isn't indicative of how I want the entire project to go. So I'm not going to release it probably the same way. I don't know. I haven't quite decided yet, but the one after that I'm also working on in parallel. I'm definitely going to release it that way. I'm going to do it in multiple ways because it's a record, like musical record, instrumental, with a spoken word story over the top of it.
Yeah, okay.
And then there's a written portion to go along with it as well. So my plan is to release the full project as a podcast, just like last time. Mm-hmm. Put the music up on streaming minus the words, and put the words up on Audible and audiobook platforms on their own. And then also have the written portion available for print and ebooks and stuff too. So that is the next big project after the Halloween EP. So yes, I will be doing it again, and I will be very curious to see how it goes. So
nice.
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's very, very exciting. Well, you know, when it's all up and ready, as long as you haven't scared us literally to death, perhaps come back on and we'll have a chat about it. That'd be good.
That'd be fun. Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. All right. Well, as always happens when Blake is on the podcast, we have blinked and an hour has gone by. So we managed to avoid talking about any news. We managed to avoid talking about anything that Joe had asked us specifically to talk about. And as everybody knows, that is exactly what I try to do every single time I'm on this podcast. So thank you very much for that, Blake. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm here to sabotage anything and everything.
Well, we are going to go over the road and do a bit more on Patreon. I don't know if you're around for another half hour or so, Blake, if you fancy it, if you've got stuff to do. I've realized this is something that a more professional podcaster would have mentioned before hitting the record button, but I'm just going to say it on air and we'll see what happens.
Well, Jay, you do realize that the last time we spoke on the internet, we did speak for about 4 hours. So
We did.
I have time for you, baby. I have time.
Okay, good. Well, thank you very much. If you want to listen to that, I don't know what we're going to talk about. We've got a couple of things. We'll figure it out in the break. But if you want to listen to that, you can become a Guitar Nerds Patreon backer for as little as $1 a month, by which you get the podcast ad-free and early, or you can pay $5 a month and get the extra content, or you can pay $10 a month and Joe will sing you a happy song at the end of the podcast. If that's what you're into. Personally, I would pay $10 a month for Joe to never talk to me ever again. But I've offered him that, and apparently that's not enough money. So back to the drawing board for me. Thanks very much for tuning in. Live long and prosper. Bye.
Take care.
Later.
Listen up, I know you wanted to. Checking on the Guitar Nerds when you're feeling cool. You're a Telecaster and a Stratocaster fan. You also like Reverend and a bit of Music Man. You take one look at a Fender custom shop. You know that that's another $3,000 you're gonna drop. And I love 50s, cute, so unique. Now go and buy the plugin from the plugin of the week. Guitar Nerds, come in your ears. Listen to us day and night and drink a bunch of beers. We got Mad Knight and Jake Ross too. And even shows up when it's got nothing to do. We got JD and Naomi on the cloud. But I am the best one cause I'm sexy, dumb and loud. But we couldn't do this podcast without you. Yeah, everything a podcast host could ever want is true.
Joseph D, Jordan Brown, Holly Simpson, Eric Horn, John Conway, Studio Rats, Russell Ealing, Yogi the guitarist, Ty Allen, Kyle Lifter, Todd Simons, Kyle Harris, Joe Hopper, Sean Hughes, Brian Hansen, Eric Emma, Jeffrey Wax, Shay Mann, Brian Einsler, Jonathan Haverty, Gavin Van der Linden, Marcus Alcalawaki, Robert Cutterworth, Samuel Foss, Stuart Watson, Christian Munn Hansen, Keith Adams, Eric Fowle, Dallas Henry, Scott Hunting, Jack Cutmore, Andy Manley, Simon Milbourne, Ken Sayers, Sean Arlo, Joe Puddick, the Tomar Popcast, which is Blake Wyland, Dave Lee, Dave Daigle, Ross Edwards, Scott Anglin, Aaron Sherman, James Paul, Ryan McDonough, Jake Gray, Derek Rich, Scott Kennedy, Steve Merkel, Abe Matthews, Christopher Losef, Stephen Buck, Robin Smith, Kytopia, the band, J.D. Short, Andy McKenzie, Fred Page, Paul Culligan, Rob Norwich, Scott O'Brien, and who Grammy it?
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.